हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, so page 134, chapter 27, Lord Krishna's instructions on the process of deity worship. The devotee should offer homage to the Lord with all kinds of hymns and prayers, both from the Puranas and from other ancient scriptures, and also from ordinary traditions, praying, O Lord, please be merciful to me. He should fall down like a rod to offer his obeisances, placing his head at the feet of the deity. He should then stand with folded hands before the Lord and pray, O my Lord, please protect me, who am surrendered unto you. I am most fearful of this ocean of material existence, standing as I am in the mouth of death. Right, so the devotee, the fear is of the material energy, because it can distract you from Krishna. That's the actual point. They're not afraid of leaving the body or this or that. What they're afraid of is that forgetting Krishna. That's the main thing, right? That's what I'm saying. Praying in this way, the devotee should respectfully place upon his head the remnants I offer to him. And if the particular deity is meant to be sent away at the end of the worship, then this should be performed. The devotee, once again placing the light of the deity's presence inside the light of the lotus within his own heart. Well, his own heart. Right, so that's the point, is you're not just telling him to go away, but then the Lord goes back into your heart.
Yes.
That's the whole point. Right? When everyone develops faith in me, in my form as a deity, or in other bona fide manifestations, one should worship me in that form. I certainly exist both within all created beings and also separately in my original form, since I am the supreme soul of all. Śrīla Viṣṇu Chakravarti Thakura elaborates, though worship of the deity form has been mainly described here, faith is the cause of my appearing. Without faith, realization of my presence will not take place in that form, though I am directly present. Right? So, even though Krishna's there, if you don't have faith, you won't see he's there. You know, like I mentioned, that pujari, it wasn't until he was 30 that he understood that this is the deity. Right? So, it's only when that faith, then you realize, though it is Krishna. Right? When you install a deity, Krishna is directly there. Virat avidusham, those who are ignorant see me as matter. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43-17. Thus, verse 48 shows that faith is necessary. To show the principal places of his appearance, he mentioned the deity in other forms in this chapter. But if one has great faith, I can be seen in all things. I was easily visible in the pillar of Hiranyakashipu. Right? So, the point is you can see Krishna everywhere. So at least the deity, the ideas for the neophyte, is a start. You can see Krishna here. Yeah. Then you get used to seeing Krishna and serving and remembering Krishna. So then the idea is that from there you can expand. You can see all the living entities, connection to Krishna, the whole material energy in connection to Krishna.
Yes.
That's the idea.
So how can we develop faith?
By association. Is that I wanted to bring that down. I just came across something Bhaktivinoda Thakur said about this, you know, about the faith and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Maharaj, even if someone is in front of the deity, but if he has no faith, he sees only matter.
Yes. I remember one devotee was telling me, that it was a festival. I guess his mother had come for something, who knows, Janmashtami or something. And he took her in the deity room, and I mean the pujar, you know, the temple room, and all that. And afterwards, she mentioned, what amazing flower arrangements, but why are you, you know, what's the occasion that you're putting all these flowers and making this arrangement? She did not see the deities. She only saw the flowers.
There is some benefit.
Of course, it's prashad flowers, so she gets benefit. She appreciated the flowers, so yeah, there's always benefit. Yeah. But it's a gyata sukriti because they can't really understand. But. Yes.
All right, some devotees, they parallel the deity worship with the Astakaliya Lila Smarana. Is that a bona fide method?
Then how are they paralleling this?
You know, like, you know, we wake up, we go to the temple, then at the same time, Krishna wakes up with the gopis, and then we feed the, you know, the divine couple. That's when Mother Yashoda feed Krishna, and then they, you know, like that. So it's an entire meditation.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but the point is to be always absorbed in Krishna. And so if they're absorbing them in Krishna, and the where they've gotten this details of Astakaliya Lila from are bona fide, then it's always a nice thing, but it shouldn't be considered that because I'm doing that, I'm more advanced than others. That they should be very careful of. Because just because you know more facts doesn't mean you're more advanced. In the material world, it does, because all you have is facts. So the knowledge and skills you have, that is that defines your greater advancement, your greater value, whether how much you're paid, how much, you know, you're considered. But when it's the quality of remembering Krishna and all that. So they can see that there. But at the same time, as we see another quality of the gopis, is that they can see Krishna everywhere. You know what I'm saying? So it's a nice meditation, and it's not a bad thing. But it shouldn't be like propagated that this is how meditation should be done. Does that make sense? You know, just because they're doing it, that doesn't mean now everybody else should do it. But of course, there will be parallels. But at the same time, is because it's being done in the Pancharatrik system because of how you say the Vaidhi Bhakti, then naturally it's there. Because if it was happening and spontaneous, then there probably wouldn't be so much talk about it. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense.
The last part, I couldn't just catch because, you know, too many distractions.
Okay. That aspect of it spontaneous.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but then they probably wouldn't be talking about it so much. So if they're talking about it a lot and presenting it as a very, very nice thing, then you have the hand thingy? Hand? Going, slightly bending over, putting hand? Just stopping and noticing, that's good. Most don't notice. But then to not do anything once you notice, then.
Well, actually, you were discussing both of you, so in between.
Yes, but that's why then you go like this. You don't know that one? Yeah, so you use it. Right? You know, all the things your mother taught you aren't all bad, right? As the prophet told Subhagmar, he says, all the things you learn from your family, don't neglect the cultural things, don't neglect those now that you're a devotee. Because that's generally the thing. Oh, that's all Maya, so now we do. Yeah. You know, if you have to go through, there's no other way around. You know, he somehow or another put up all these fences here and that to make sure no one gets behind and all that. Yeah, so you have to walk in front. That way you can see everything, control everything. Who's going where. So then you have to do. Okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if it's coming up as a topic for discussion and people are this and it's a technique and all that, then it's not actually, it's a Vaidhi, not a Rag thing. If it's a Rag thing, they probably won't talk about it. It might come up in a conversation that somehow or another you can, by inference, you can work back to it. You know what I'm saying? But if it's being directly mentioned, then it's an aspect of Vaidhi. And they'll be saying, no, this is the way to do it, so that makes it even more Vaidhi. But because of the nature of it, they'll be calling it that it's advanced and it's Rag. So that kind of stuff, that's where you want to not get, not encourage. Mm-hmm. That they're remembering Krishna, absorbing Krishna, that's very good. That's, you know, remembering Krishna is always good. No matter what, even Kamsa is remembering Krishna, it's good. Right? But at the same time, is they shouldn't make the mistake of having ego that I'm better because I'm doing this. Because otherwise, then it's not even ego in the mode of goodness, because it's a duty you're supposed to do, but it never mentions that as a specific duty, like that. And so then it would be a prestige thing. So that's mode of passion. And if they think I'm better than others because of that, that's mode of ignorance. You know, so like that, you know, because you know, of whatever their qualification, you know, that kind of background, I'm a professional like this, so I'm more advanced, I'm better than others, that's actually devotional service in the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? But you want to be recognized for what you're doing and all that, then that's passion. You're doing it because it should be done and all that, then it's there. You know what I'm saying? Because it's not part of the Vaidhi. When one gets to the point where one's remembering Krishna, then to add to that, then the Astakali Lila helps you put all that remembrance of Krishna into a structure. But to use the structure just to get yourself to remember Krishna, then it's fine, it's nice, but it's being used in the context of Vaidhi. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so just there, just so that they're clear on it. It's fine to use, but don't try to propagate it and don't, you know... Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because anyway, the feeding is done by the gopis. That one. The later one's done by Mother Yashoda. The breakfast is done by her. That's the Shukta Shakati Bhaji one. Yeah. But we sing it at noon because then that's connected with Lord Chaitanya's pastime. So. Does that make sense? You know, so Krishna has dinner in the early and then has supper in the evening. Does that make sense? If you're using that, those terms, dinner and supper, dinner means the main meal.
Yes.
And supper means a lighter meal.
Yes.
And then you'll have a snack out there. But the Shukta Shakati Bhaji that he's having, that's all happening in the morning. Because they do go before they go out with the cows. You know what I'm saying? That's where you get that kind of thing. But then when you're dealing with the Brahminical cultures, that then their lunch will be their main one. You know, or the kings. When you have that control that you can be in your place at lunch, then that would be your main, that would be your dinner.
Yes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But when you have to go out to work, then it depends upon what you do. So, you know, the modern most do lighter at breakfast and the bigger in the evening. So the evening is dinner.
Yes.
And then you call it breakfast, or you call it lunch, or you know, snack, or you know, this and that, because it's not the main meal. But if lunch or breakfast is your main meal, then the secondary one that's later, that will be supper. Right. Yeah. So it's not to do with the time of the day. It's to do with the you know how whether it's the primary meal, secondary, sort of like this. So, yeah. So that one, that Mother Yashoda is doing,
yes.
You know, and something when he gets up and this and that. But then, you know, does that make sense? Like that. You know, so there are parallels, but it's not exact. Because the Pancharatrik system is that Radha and Krishna are together all day. So how does that fit in the Astakali Alila? Because
yes.
They're not in together all day in the Astakali Alila. So you know, you understand. So you can parallel it. And that can remind you of what they are doing, but you can't say that this is that. You know what I'm saying? The Mangalartik, that's the gopis. But the other parts of the day, then you can't say that that's the gopis.
Yeah.
Was that? Is that like at Radhakund, they're just taking fruit, you know, at lunch, but we're doing a mit. You know, so that's why it's just, why unnecessarily force it? You know, the deity worship is running one, that's running the other, and Krishna can do both of them simultaneously. It's not a problem for him. Right? You know, he gets
like
both.
Separate deities. One is resting, one is taking
Just like that.
One is in the procession.
Yeah, just like that. So he can do all that at once. So, you know, for him it works out nice. So the more service and all that. So that's what I mean. It's not a bad thing, but it shouldn't be, you know, construed that this is the sadhana, it's artificial. Is that?
Yeah.
Take that. Unless you're a Nimbarka, then that's okay. But if you're a Gaudiya, then it won't work.
Nimbarka, they have their own padati. It's not like that.
That's there. But my point is in their padati, Radha and Krishna are never separated. So all day they're together. So it's like our pancharatrik worship of Radha and Krishna.
Yeah.
That's why what Lord Chaitanya's given is not been given before.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. You know what I'm saying? So they're worshiping all the other sampradayas are all worshiping who worship Radha Krishna, all worshiping in lower Goloka. They're not worshiping in Braj.
Yeah.
Like that. Like that. So it's a slightly different flavor. It's all good, but you know, it's a matter of taste. So yeah, and he says, I was easily visible in the pillar of Hiranyakashipu. So Prahlad could see him there. He says, is he in the pillar? Yeah, he's in the pillar, and he could see him. So that's the point. Is we get the points as, okay, he's the taste of water and this and that, but we may not see. But we at least remember to some degree, some aspects, some tattva and this and that. But it gets to the point where they can see. They look, they can see. Because it's there, that potency, it's Krishna. And he's, who's the taste in water? Krishna. So he has a form. You know? Because he is so attractive and so beautiful, that taste, that's what's in water. Right? Also, it depends upon which brand you buy. But.
How much Krishna you have in it.
Yes, how much Krishna's in your bottle of water. Yeah, so, yeah, Bisleri a little less, and then the others have, yeah.
So, whenever scriptures mention that the pure devotees of the Lord, they see the Lord everywhere, that is literal and not metaphorical.
No, it's literal, but it's just on what level they're seeing, but they're always seeing. So they could be seeing as Bhagavan, Paramatma, Brahman, they could be seeing all these different aspects. It's just, the point is that it always, everything reminds them of Krishna. They're not looking at the external form as simply an external form.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Krishna continued, oh no, it's footnote. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:8-17. Sri Krishna continued. By worship of me through the various methods prescribed in Vedas and Tantras, one will gain from me his desired perfection in both this life and the next. The devotee should, so that's why the importance of pure devotion, because if you want prema, then that has to be the function. If you're worshipping with some material motive, then that material motive will be realized. You know, when, that's another thing, but it will be realized. Right? And then you'll be here. Because if you want material stuff, you have to be here to get it. Like that. As far as I understand, Amazon does not deliver in the apricot lila. It's not happening.
Alibaba?
No, not even Alibaba. No. The problem with them is you have to buy a whole bunch. Like that. It's good price, but you have to buy 100, you know.
Until they deliver, you're already there.
Yeah. That's another point. Yeah, you have to consider that. The devotee should more fully establish my deity by solidly constructing a temple, along with beautiful gardens. So the temple includes the gardens. And it also includes that it's solid. Solid.
The temple.
Yeah, it means it's I would think more security. Right, yeah.
Gardens.
Yeah. These gardens should be set aside to provide flowers for the regular daily worship, special deity processions and holiday observance services. So these gardens, then, they provide the flowers on a daily basis, so they have to be big enough that you actually get that much flowers. And special deity processions can go through the gardens, so they're laid out very nicely, and special holiday observances can happen in those gardens. So that means, like in Ratha Yatra, he goes to the, what is it?
Jagannath Vallabh Gardens.
Yeah, so the special gardens, he goes there for that festival. You know, the other times they may be just be giving flowers, but that's the whole idea, is that the gardens do all these. They're not just to look at. They actually provide flowers, the processions can go through there, and you can have special festivals. So they might be set up for special mandaps for different things and like that.
Is it some special arrangement? The temple must be inside the garden, or
it's always nice. I mean, your ideal is you have the temple surrounded by gardens.
Yes.
But then the point is that people have to one, they have to see in that way and have the facilities for that. Because otherwise you get a small place and you can't get in by the time then, because wherever you set the temple, then that will become the center, then everybody buys around, you can't have gardens. Or they give land with enough space to make gardens, but no one sees the gardens as important, so then they do something with the gardens, and then, like this land that we're sitting on now, this was all land of the Chaitanya Math before. This was known as Math. You know, the mutt. It means that, yeah, it's just that it was the land of the mutt.
Okay.
Yeah, it means from the Jalangi all the way up to Chaitanya Mutt, you know, back to that. That they owned all of that. Now they own less. Yeah. My point is that it's not always seen as an economic thing. You know, so if you sell this, we can do this, we can put up a hostel, we can do this, but then they miss the gardens. So very few have gardens connected.
It's one of the easy things to kind of get rid of if you like think. Yeah,
because it's just thinking, well, you know, for what we'll get from this, we can buy, but then, then after 10, 20 years, then when the money runs out, then where are the flowers?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the whole thing, is that the idea is that all these things are connected. But they might be somewhere else also. They don't have to be, because sometimes if you're just growing flowers or certain things, then right around the temple won't work. You have to have their own place, you know, especially fruit gardens and those things. You don't want them in a public space, because people see them, they want to eat them, and you know what I'm saying? So then you have the, I say, the monkeys without the prehensile toes up the trees, taking the stuff and all that. These gardens should be set aside to... Okay. One who offers the deity gifts of land, markets, cities, and villages, so that regular daily worship and special festivals of the deities may go on continually, will achieve opulence equal to my own. So we see there's not lands, markets, cities, villages. So it's not limited. So it means that the land, of course, then things can be grown there, gardens can be made for the facilities for the deities and all that, so that's going to be there. Markets, cities, and villages, because there'll be taxes off those. That will go to the deities. So, let us say, for example, you have... someone as their income, they're getting the tax from any of these. You know, let's say someone, okay, he has 10 villages that he's getting the tax from. Right? And then he gets that. And then he has the tax he pays above him to whoever's above him until it finally gets to the government. Right? So now, if in that he gives, let's say, like one village to the temple, That means all the tax that they would pay to him now is given to the deities.
Yes.
So in that way you say the deity is the proprietor of that village. You know what I'm saying? It's so because the tax goes to him. That's yes. who owns it.
So then the citizens also benefit because they're giving...
Yes, because it's going to the... So people don't mind. It's all going to the deities. You know, they're not worried about, you know, what strange bureaucracy that the money's going into. You know, they know it's going to the deities. So does that make sense? So someone has, you know, a market, so therefore the money from that goes to... You know, it's just like, let's say, you know, in the modern context, you have a mall. And so somebody owns that. From that, they're getting profit. They have to maintain it and upgrade it and all that. That's going to be the expenditure. But what's above that, that goes to the temple. Does that make sense? So that's the system. So some of these big, big temples, then you see cities giving is not a big problem.
It's just easy to maintain the deity.
Yes, because then you can do, because there it says, so that daily worship and special festivals may go on continually,
yes.
like that. Mm-hmm. So you can always do, expand, make it very nice. And then also when there's like this, they can make it bigger. Mm-hmm. Like what's his name? Tirupati. Because they get so much income. Mm-hmm. Then I think it's if you go and take darshan, then you get some prasad for free. Right? Well, other temples who don't have such income, then, you know, they'll give out little bit, but if you want to take more, you have to buy. You know, does that make sense? So it's just, you have that kind of, those aspects.
Monster ladders.
Huh?
Monster ladders.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Big business.
Yes. By installing the deity of the Lord, one becomes a king of the entire earth. By building a temple for the Lord, one becomes ruler of the three worlds. Right? So, touch bigger. Install the deity, become the king of the entire earth, but you build a temple, then you become ruler of the three worlds. Right? It's getting up, it's going up. By worshipping and serving the deity, one goes to the planet of Lord Brahma, right? About that. And by performing all three of these activities, one achieves a transcendental form like my own. You go to Vaikuntha. But one who simply engages in devotional service with no consideration of fruit or results attains me. Right? So if you want Krishna, then don't do it for those others. Yeah, it's like, oh. Thus, whoever worships me according to the process I've described will ultimately attain pure devotional service unto me. Right? So if you worship according to what he said, with the whole purpose of developing love for him, then that's what will happen. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. He who worships my deity form without other desires such as jnana and karma, or he who engages others in worship by making them give wealth, land, and shops, attains prema. And by prema, bhakti yogena, he attains me. Sri Krishna concluded. Okay. So this is, what do you call it? So that was that, all the things of that surrender, giving, and worship, and all that. Now he gives the opposite. Sri Krishna concluded, anyone who steals the property of the demigods or the brahmanas, whether originally given to them by himself or someone else, must live as a worm in stool for 100 million years. Big profit. Right? Because how much can they steal, right? That they get 100 million years, right? Not only the performer of the theft, but also anyone who assists him, instigates the crime, or simply approves of it, must also share the reaction in the next life. So they'll all be friends together. According to their degree of participation, they each must suffer a proportionate consequence. Right, so for stealing, you get the 100 million. Then how much they're involved in it, how you like that? Then it'll be up to that much or less. But you know, when you're talking about 100 million, then less is still quite a lot. Right? Yeah, you wouldn't want to mess with that. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates: the various results for someone who gives wealth or land for worshiping the Lord have been stated. The result for a person who takes away the property of the Lord is now stated. Right? Because then you see sometimes that happens in different places. There's the temple, and you know it's on you know, property. So you have this one person, then so many others like that, and then these relatives get together, you know, like that, and try to take like that. They don't quite understand then how the reactions are not
amazing,
inspiring.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
The same thing happened, I think so, it was Ananta Padmanabh's song, Trivandrum, when they opened the jaws and then people were just dying because they wanted to get the entire wealth of the Lord, some few years back.
They took. Yeah. You don't want to know what happens to these
Supreme
people.
Supreme Court gave the order that they should not open the third door, otherwise then now everybody feels because it's still closed and it's complete with the wealth.
Yeah, no, but if they take it, then that's the reaction that will happen to them. You know? Because it doesn't just say a worm. It's not Creamy Bojan. Here's worm and stool. Because Creamy Bojan, at least you eat other worms. But here's the stool. That's all you get. The result accrues not only to the thief, but to all involved. The result of the crime after death is experienced by those who assist the act, those who instigate the act, and those who applaud the act, since they should share the results of the crime. According to the seriousness of the crime, Bhūyāśī, there will be greater suffering, Bhūyā. Yeah, so that's what he means. Bhūyā, yeah. Okay, the greater suffering.
So Maharaj, in some temple, it means the deity is the owner.
The deity is the owner.
But it's mean, it is officially, I think.
I think some of the older temples it is. But whether the newer temples it is. Like in Vrindavan, then Man Singh arranged that, I don't remember all the trees, but what's it? Tamarind tree?
Imlitala.
Yeah. Then Sringarvat, Vamsivat, and there's a fourth tree, or a fourth place. I don't remember what it is. But within that confined, that all it was belonged to Jiva Goswami.
Oh yeah, when Krishna jumped into Jamuna, that Kadamba tree on the bank.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. Okay.
Because it's in the same line.
Okay. No, but isn't that, that's at Imlitala.
No, Imlitala is further east.
Oh, okay. Okay, yes, but it says that in that area there, that belongs to Jiva Goswami. So what happened in between, I'm not sure, but it all was there, you know, so connected, so Radha Damodar and everything could go nicely. Mm-hmm. So you can see is that they would arrange like that. So it can be in the deity's name. It's not a problem.
Yes.
Villagers, they have in writing, this place belongs to deities.
Oh.
Even Gochar Bhumis, which are there. Pasturing grounds.
Okay.
Even that are written in the names of cows. This land belongs to cows.
Okay. Nice.
And later, then the worship started reducing.
Okay.
And then the government took the land and distributed the land to, poor people.
Yeah, no, they do that. But then what happens to those government dies? They'll be the worm in the stool of all those people that live there now. Yeah, mm-hmm. Good. Which one did you get?
Honey.
Honey, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I tried the ginger before.
Yeah? Also good, okay. Mm-hmm. So only the mint left, right?
We'll see how it goes.
Okay.
Can I ask a side question?
A side question. Just depends. You can try. If you get an answer, that's another thing.
Because many devotees have this clarification to be known because Gopal Bhatta Goswami is deity, Radharaman.
Wadi?
Radharaman in Vrindavan.
Right.
Yeah. So his Radharani is unusual. So what
his Radharani is unusual.
And Radharani is not in the deity form, you know. It is in a different form. So
why is that a problem?
No, what exactly is the Shastra behind it?
What's the Shastra behind it? Because there has to be a Shastra behind it, otherwise it wouldn't be like that, because it's different from what they know. All the deities in Vrindavan, none of them had Radharani with them. Madan Mohan was just Madan Mohan. Govindi is just Govindi. Gopinath is just Gopinath. So when the Goswamis were worshipping, you just had them. And they were in the temples. Then when Janava, when she went to Vrindavan, she is the one that had the Radharanis installed.
Nobody
accused her of feminism. Yeah, no, that time. See, this is the thing is that you can do so many things, but it's an attitude. Well, now it's that they do. The attitude's different, so then you just. I don't know. It's just. Before, so much could be done, so much control and all that. It's just that the feminine moods and all that were maintained. But it doesn't mean that you can't be powerful in this. Mm. You know, so it's like that. You know, it is, you have a big family, you have the grandmother, she runs the whole thing. Everyone's scared of her, right? Like that. It's an attitude, but still she does it in a feminine way. It's all the old cultures are all like that. This modern is just an impersonal, and it's shifting it from being relationship based, being into, you know, monetary things, secondary. It's just, you know, taking the secondary and making it more secondary. You know, perverting the perversion. So. And so then for her is this, those things that are connected with Radharani are kept there. And so then the point is it's Tadiya, so then it's non-different. Yeah. Conclusion. Even very opulent presentations do not satisfy Krishna if they are offered by non-devotees. But he is pleased by any insignificant offering made by his loving devotees. Whoever worships the Lord according to the process he has described will ultimately attain pure devotional service unto him. So that's the whole point, is that you do everything to satisfy Krishna, that's what pleases him, and that it doesn't matter however insignificant or however grand it is, if it's offered with devotion, that pleases Krishna. And by that pure devotion, one will attain him. Like that.
Maharaj, this is why it is so in the age of Dwapara, it is the main thing, deity worship. The main.
In Dwapara. Yes. So then they would do, like you probably would say, is they would offer, you know, you have six offerings a day. And you have, you know, the plate, because the plates are of different size. So 36 inches considered first class, then 24 is next, and then 18 is the. Yeah. Like 18 we would consider a big plate. But actually it's considered the smallest of them. A 3 foot plate is considered, you know, 33 foot means, what is it? Would be? Yeah, 90 centimeters. So a 90 centimeter plate is considered the first class plate.
For Pashan.
Yeah, for the noon offering, that kind, for the bog offering,
yes.
The big,
but
big offering.
Madhavas, it is such a big one.
Yeah, we generally use the big ones, like that. So you know, so it comes down from there. So you know, 50 centimeters is the 50. That means what do we say? Is it 90? 45 is the smallest, and then 2 foot would be. What would be 2 foot? 60. So 60. So you have 90, 60, and 45. These are the, you know, we're talking about the plates, not the pizzas. Right? Like that.
Similar kind of principle.
Huh? Yeah, same kind of principle, yeah. Like that, yeah. So then they'll have all this cups and plates and, you know, everything that goes along with it. All that would be solid gold. Right? They would make the offering with that, and after the offering, then those would be thrown out, because they're used.
Only one time.
Yeah, and then the next offering, they would do it with a new set. That makes sense? So then what would happen to that, you know, with it, you know, thrown in a pile on the side, then someone comes along and uses it for a big yajna, or, you know, they melt it down, make new ones, or they're given to people, you know, to use, or, you know, but so you can see the opulence that was there was a touch more than what's going on now. You know.
Pretty solid operation.
Yeah. It's not that anybody's coming to the temples and stealing anything, because it's like, you know, that means there has to be so much opulence that nobody cares.
Just they actually know these principles we just went through.
Right? Yeah, that's also there. Yeah. It will only take it once it gets thrown out. You know? We're good? Okay, chapter 28, Jnana Yoga, Pratigya. One should see everything in connection to God and thus avoid false identification with matter. Chapter 28 summarizes questions and answers. Sri Uddhava asked Krishna question 1133 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From 1128 to 11, Sri Uddhava said, "My dear Lord, it is not possible for this material existence to be the experience of either the soul, who is the seer, or the body, which is the seen object. On the one hand, the spirit soul is innately endowed with perfect knowledge, and on the other hand, the material body is not a conscious living entity. To whom then does this experience of material existence pertain?" Right? Does that make sense? Because the soul, then there have actual the transcendental position, pure knowledge and that. So they wouldn't be connected with the experience, technically. And the body is dead matter. It really couldn't care less. You know? So the material experience, who does that connect to? Who is that, who is experiencing that?
Yes.
Okay. The spirit soul is inexhaustible, transcendental, pure, self-luminous, and never covered by anything material. It is like fire, but the non-living material body, like firewood, is dull and unaware. So in this world, who is it that actually undergoes the experience of material life? Right, so generally we'll never think that far, but if you look at it, it's a very valid point.
Profound question, yeah.
You know? Sri Krishna answers this question throughout the rest of the chapter. Jaya Prakashika. In the 28th chapter, the Lord, who speaks all types of philosophy, explains Jnana Yoga of the Advaita philosophy, which sees the world as illusion. Sardarta Darshani 11:28-1. Right? Because you'll have, we can explain the world as illusion, we can explain it as real. It means it's the illusion means how you're perceiving it. It's there. Right? But for the Mayavadis and the Buddhists, they'll say it's not there.
Yes.
Right? It's just you're concocting it. But the point is, it is there, but what you're seeing, that's the illusion. Because you're seeing it separate from Krishna when it's not. Is that? Yeah. Everything created in this universe is a material product of the three modes of nature. It's subject to sensory perception and is essentially unreal. Right? Because you're seeing it by the senses, you're seeing it through the three kinds of false ego. You know, so then what actually are you dealing with? Actually, the designations of good and bad that we assign to the various objects and activities of the world are all superficial. So you'll say, this is good, that's bad. But it's all the mundane. What has it got to do with the soul? Right? So that's the question that comes up, is who's experiencing it? Because the soul is transcendental, and the body is not experiencing it. So then what is? So that's the point. So then we'll put good and bad in connection with that experience. But that experience, because it's through the modes of nature, is illusory. Right? Okay? Thought we were getting to some headspace before, right?
Maybe it is going to be revealed.
Huh?
It's going to be revealed.
Yes. So that's why then he pointed out, it has a connection to serving Krishna, that's good. It doesn't have a connection to serving Krishna, that's what's not good.
Yes.
So good and bad of this world, we get into that too much. We make the distinction so that we, if we're not already situated in that position that we said, that formula that we said, that if it's connected to Krishna, that's good, it's not connected, it's bad. Then we look at the material world, what things are connectable to Krishna, and what duties are connectable to Krishna. So we accept those. That's the mode of goodness. Then connecting it to Krishna, that's pure goodness. So we're only using good and bad enough to tell, so we situate ourselves so it's easier to get to pure goodness. But to put too much emphasis on the good and bad, right, which is a material concept, That's then where the problem lies. Right? Because then you identify with it, you have to endeavor for it. You know, something's good, you have to work for that. If something's bad, you have to work to, you know, get rid of that. But where does the devotion to Krishna come in? You can say, oh, it's only good things should be offered to Krishna, but good according to who? Is it Shastras saying that? So if the Shastra's not saying that, then that means we've said it. But who's the we? Because the body's not saying it, and technically the soul on the transcendental platform, it's not going to be the one saying it. So that whole concept of ourselves as the experiencer of the material world is actually illusory. We're identifying so the modes of nature are carrying it out so we can take part. It's like virtual reality. You do exist, transcendental to the virtual reality. And the machinery that makes the virtual reality is not, couldn't care less. It has no consciousness, so it doesn't care what happens in the virtual reality. It has its method. It goes through the virtual reality, right? There's those algorithms that just make it move through. You move like this, this happens. You move like that, that happens. Right? You open this door, then, you know, there's one thing happening. You know, right? You say you get all the gingerbread. You open that door, it's the witch who owns the gingerbread. You know, so all that is all happening. Right? So that's the point. Who's experiencing that? Because the soul is transcendental. But because we identify with it, and that identity is false, that's why then we're experiencing. When in actuality, the soul is separate from that. So that position of enjoying the material world is actually an illusion, because the soul doesn't, can't. What's to enjoy? You know what I'm saying? It's dead matter. What's to enjoy? We're conscious. Right? Enjoyment's in relationship, not outside relationship. You know what I'm saying? So, you get to that kind of like, yes.
So can we say that the Kartiva and Svargiya Rasa, they pose based on the false identities? It's not the real experience of the soul.
No, only Vaikuntha. But the Svargiya, that has the aspect of, if you're following the rules for it, being in the mode of goodness, that it's the platform by which the form would be like that used in Vaikuntha Rasa. But it's about Krishna, while Svargiya can be used about yourself. You know, like that. It means the performance of it's all proper, but at the end it's yours. While the other, the performance is proper, but it's for Krishna. You know, and Partiva is just the experience of the senses and the sense objects with the mechanics as it's happening now. You're not taking consideration of the emotions. So that's actually impersonal. Right? The other one's personal, but it's not actual real personal, because the person's between the bodies and the subtle bodies, but the souls, it's not. Right? Yeah. So that's the question comes up. Well, Vaikuntha Rasa, it's between the souls and Krishna.
Yeah.
Right. Does that make sense? Because there, then the Krishna is his body, and the souls on that transcendental platform, they are theirs also. They're extent. Does that make sense? So that's the part is that in between, who's experiencing? Okay. Actually, the designations of good and bad that we assign to the various objects and activities of this world are all superficial. It is better to avoid condemning or praising anything of this world, right? So you only condemn or praise in connection with Krishna.
Yes.
So it's only a matter of that. But the point is, since it's about Krishna, then being engaged in Krishna's service is the important thing. So you're going to be encouraging for Krishna consciousness and only pointing out what's not useful in Krishna consciousness. Right? It's not because it's not Krishna conscious, then that's bad, and then there's the whole condemnation. Because how is that connected to Krishna? How is that serving Krishna? Because we have this idea that pointing out good and bad is service.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, the self-appointed, you know, generalissimo of pointing out everybody's fault in the temple, right? Or the yatra, or, you know, however, whatever we see as our domain. You know.
Yeah. you know, wherever we are, basically.
Yeah, but what are we doing for it? Just like you'll have the, you know, in the political scene, you'll have those parallel governments. You have the main government, then you have the parallel government. And they claim to be the real government, but all they're doing is finding fault in the actual governing government. And they're not doing necessarily anything for the people through that governance. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the... So finding fault is not actually a service, which might be shocking. But somehow or another, when it has the process of devotion, kuti nati is not one of them. Yeah, it's just not one of the... Yes, the tenth process. You know, like you have the nine processes, then you have the tenth process.
We would have quite a few Paramahamsas.
Yeah, we would. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, and how quickly you could advance,
exactly,
right? You know, just so quickly you could go from just being an ordinary guy up to being a Paramahamsa.
Paramahamsa guy.
Yeah, Paramahamsa guy. Yes.
Maharaj, a few chapters back, we had dealt with the same kind of question and the same philosophy, and again we're dealing with the same thing.
And did we? Have you become realized in it from the last chapter? If you are, then I can understand the complaint.
It's not a complaint,
right? But you know, is that make sense? Just like. Repetition of things that are connected to Krishna, is it a problem? Like, does Mother Jashoda get tired of waking Krishna up in the morning? Right? No. So that's not.
Anyway, it sounds good.
Because it's all about remember, always remember Krishna, never forget. Right? So you're going to see a thread there, you know, through everything, right? It is better to avoid condemning or praising anything of this world, because doing so simply entangles one in matter and deprives one of the higher goals of spiritual life. Mm-hmm. Right? So unless there's some actual aspect of service, but the point is, it's wrong, it's enough to identify that that's not useful, you just go around it, or over it, or under it, or, you know, whatever, through it, whatever is your method, or any combination. Yeah, because if you go through and around at the same time, then you put a spin on it, so then it kind of spins out of the way.
Yeah.
Okay. Hidden within every object of the material universe is the spirit soul, who underlies both the causes and products of manifest existence. Right? Because he'll be the cause, not the remote cause. It'll be the immediate because of his desire. Mm-hmm. Right? Then behind that, material nature is taking care of that. Mm-hmm. And then behind that's the Lord. Mm-hmm. One should see things in this light and thus move about the material world in a mood of detachment. Right? It's just showing closer and closer, finer details. It's vichar, looking at it from different angles. And so from that, then it's the... Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As long as there is a relationship between the bodily senses. But does that make sense? So if we praise or condemn things of this world, then that means we get entangled in that area that we're praising or condemning. Mm-hmm. But how is that service? Mm-hmm. Service is you're doing service. Yes. You're avoiding what's not useful in service, and you're engaging in things that are useful. Mm-hmm. So you're discriminating, but you're not having to point out the good and bad of the world. Just what's useful in devotional service. Otherwise, if you point it out in the world, you have to get involved in that. As long as there's a relationship between the bodily senses, which are comprised of matter, and the soul, which is the reality, one will continue in false consciousness. Although material existence is unreal, those who lack discrimination remain entangled in the cycle of birth and death because of their absorption in sense gratification. But unreal means it's not to do with the soul and Krishna. That's actual reality. All the phases of life, such as birth, death, sorrow, and happiness, belong not to the soul, but to the materialistic false ego. By learning to distinguish between the soul and its opposite, matter, one can destroy this false identification. Right? So you have to be able to tell what is the soul and what is matter. Yes.
So in between soul and the matter, there's a false ego, basically. That's what connects.
Yes. Yeah, because the polluted consciousness. When the consciousness becomes covered by these egos, then you're identifying with the sense and the sense object in that interaction. But if you don't identify, you only identify as servant of Krishna, then you can engage the senses in serving Krishna, so you're not within the illusion. Though you're in the same place working with the same object. Does that make sense? That's the amazing thing about it, because we think it has to be something completely different. You know, but the devotee's on the bus and the karmi's on the bus. But for one is an illusion and one's not. Though they're on the same bus. Right? Does that make sense? And the ticket price is the same also. No? Yeah. I mean, did you find any buses as you were traveling that if you're transcendental you pay less?
No.
No.
I wished for it many times at the airport that I could just like kind of give a garland and board any plane I wanted.
Yeah,
never really made it back.
No, couldn't happen. Sad.
Sad.
Yeah, they should have Narad Muni Airlines. Just Eddie Devotee could get on and just go.
They have Garuda.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Garuda. Yeah. Garuda.
We need to pay. Need to pay.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, but to all the phases of material life, says birth, death, sorrow, and happiness, belong not to the soul, but to the materialistic false ego. Because that's the thing, it's the false ego. It's not the soul, it's not the matter. By learning to distinguish between the soul and its opposite, matter, one can destroy this false identification. So if you can tell the difference, then you can get rid of the false ego that's connecting them.
Yes.
But because we can't tell the difference, we think the matter is us, so the false ego is in place.
So you're then, intelligence has to be really very alert, applying the knowledge.
Yeah, intelligence has to be alert, but it has to be alert in connection with Krishna consciousness. Because yes. Otherwise, the jnanis can see up to a certain point, but there'll still be some ego left. So only the devotees. So you see, as before, when he opened the discussion, then we have the sages and all that. Krishna is respecting them greatly because of their detachment from the world. So all you have to do is add Krishna, and they're already on the transcendental platform. Okay. There's a single absolute truth present at the beginning and at the end of this world. During its interim or maintenance phase, the cosmic manifestation is also founded upon the same absolute truth. This absolute Brahman exists everywhere, both positively by its manifestations and negatively by its aloofness. Right? Because Brahman is aloof. It's not, you know, all these qualities are there. Like when you say, you know, it's vastness, it's impersonal. Unchangingness, that's impersonal. But then you have its manifestation, right, which is then in the positive. So then you see all the things that are there. But then as the season changes, it all disappears. Like in that, I think, Hare Krishna address, you have the rains come and then all this greenery comes from the earth and all that. And then when the rainy season is over, then they all dry up and they're gone. Like that. So that point is that Brahman is the basis. Right? Does that make sense? So that from the morning, Brahman is the earth. Right? You know, so the grains mean the earth. Earth means Brahman. Brahman is unique in being self-sufficient, whereas this world is the expansion of Brahman produced through the material mode of passion. Right? Because remember, the glands was the sensual desire. And that has that potency. The potency of sexual desire, that is the potency in the glands. So it's the mode of passion, because people come here to control and enjoy. They didn't come here to be sadhus. Right? When they get sick of trying to control and enjoy because they can't, then they become sadhus.
Right?
Yeah. By the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master, one can understand the absolute truth and come to appreciate the non-spiritual nature of the material body and its extensions. Right? So only when you contact the bona fide spiritual master, those instructions, then you can tell the difference. Otherwise, without the bona fide spiritual master, you can't tell the difference. So many theories will come up with, so many ideas and all that, as we've seen. So many philosophies are there. But without bona fide means, one's in contact with the chit potency. That will take you beyond. Desisting from engagement in material sense enjoyment, one then becomes satisfied in the ecstasy of the self, just as the sun remains untouched by the coming and going of clouds. The discriminating, liberated person remains unaffected by the activities of his senses. Nevertheless, right, he's unaffected. Not that the eyes don't see things and things don't smell and this and that. It's just you're unaffected. Nevertheless, until one becomes perfectly fixed in bhakti yoga, pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, one should carefully avoid contacting material sense objects. So whatever's going on like this, but you don't specifically don't bring in contact with, so like sense objects, right? Because devotional means it's not a sense object, it's something to engage in Krishna service. You understand? So it means you're very careful not to see it separately then from Krishna. Because once the sense, the mind goes to the sense as a sense object, then that's where the difficulty comes in correcting it. So the sooner you catch it, then the easier it is. But one should avoid, right? So, nevertheless, until one becomes perfectly fixed in bhakti yoga, pure devotional service to the Lord, Supreme Lord, one should carefully avoid contacting material sense objects. Because we have the habit of sense objects means the sense gratification. Right? But once one comes to that platform of pure devotion, once fixed in that, then one's only going to see things connected to the Lord. So then one won't be distracted. Why is one distracted? Because you don't see sense gratification. Right? You become distracted because you see sense gratification.
So you don't see the problem.
But if you don't see sense gratification, then what's the problem? Right? An aspiring devotee may meet various obstacles and fall down, but in his next life he will continue his practice by dint of what he has already accomplished in devotional service. Right? Prabhupada mentions, however far you get, it will continue. Right? Because he mentions here, fall down. So that means that, you know, then at the time of death he's not remembering Krishna like that. He will never again become bound up by the laws of karma. The man who is liberated and established in discrimination will under no circumstances seek false enjoyment by indulging in material sense gratification. Because it's not real. As we mentioned, it has nothing for the soul. And the body doesn't care. So therefore, it's only the false identity. Then you identify with the senses and what's being gained from that and then think, I am enjoying, I am suffering. You get what you want, you say, I'm enjoying. You don't get what you want, you say, you're suffering. Even though what you want is someone else's suffering, and what you say is suffering, you know, it's like that.
It's only in the mental, in the mind.
It's all in the mind. Yeah, but that's because we have the material mind. So you're given the material mind as soon as you have that consciousness.
Yes.
Right? But then you give that up, then you work with the spiritual mind and spiritual intelligence and senses. So that's how you can move through this world being unaffected. Because you'll still be a person, it doesn't go away. Because it's not understood the actual nature of the soul. That's why these other schools, they think spiritual means you give all this up and there's nothing left. But it's no, you just give up the covering, the material, and use the real ones. You know, instead of using the glove, you take it off and use your hand.
When you think you have to give up the forms, that means you still think it's the forms that carry the potency. That's
yes,
why you have to
yes,
give it up.
Yeah, you have it's to give up the form because yeah. You think the form is the real thing. But when you know that it's not, it's Krishna, then you're always remembering Krishna, so the senses are never engaged in sense gratification. That's exactly the point. So, yeah. The man who is liberated and established in discrimination, right, between what's matter and spirit, will under no circumstances seek false enjoyment by indulging in material sense gratification. He knows that the soul is changeless and that any contrary conception imposed on the pure self is sheer illusion. So that's their meaning, it's illusory. If, during the immature stage of spiritual practice, one suffers physical disease or other disturbances, the Vedas enjoin that he should certainly take proper measures to eradicate the problem. The prescribed remedies... Okay. Yeah, so you take the medicines and things like that. You know, not taking the medicines, this, that, depending upon God. But God gave the Ayurveda, so then you take the medicines and depend on God. Right? Some take the medicines, don't depend on God. Some don't take the medicines and depend on God. You know? And then we take the medicines and depend on God. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so that's how it's working. Because one may say, oh, but the karma will come later and this and that. It says our plan is not to be around for it. Right? Does that make sense? You go back to Godhead, you know.
Because devotees usually say, we should not take medicines so that we suffer and we make our karma zero. That is their understanding.
Make our karma zero. Yes. Okay. But, okay, you don't take the medicines and you make your karma zero. But the body is also part of the prarabdha karma. So when they say zero means they don't take the medicine and then they lose that body? Or how does this work? They're thinking I'll have zero karma, so therefore now I'll just enjoy because everything's happening. Because is it no karma is what makes pure bhakti?
No.
No?
Medicine.
Oh, no medicine makes pure bhakti. Yeah, I'm not sure who it is. It's one of the groups, one of those puritanical groups in America. They don't take medicine.
Yeah.
Jehovah's Witnesses?
Jehovah's.
Yeah.
Really?
No blood. No
transfusion.
No transfusion. Yeah, so they get into these things. Yeah, it's nice, but, you know, they follow their rules. That's good. That's good for them. But the point is it's about serving God. So therefore, you take the medicine, you can do service.
They think they are the body.
Yeah.
That they pop up in heaven when they die in exactly the body that they die with.
Yes.
So that means that's so yeah, you have all these wrinkles.
Yeah.
That, you know,
yeah.
Do they have the walkers also? But they're instead of aluminum, they're made out of like something, you know, like jewels or something.
I'll try and contact
them. I think the Egyptians took it really. Because they took whatever they need with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, they take whatever they need with them. Yeah. Also, I think the Norsemen would do the same thing.
Uh-huh. They would have these...
Yeah,
they weren't as good architects as the Egyptians, but they would have like a pile of dirt.
Yeah, but everything's inside there. Your horse goes with you, all your maid servants go with you. It's like everybody goes. Like, so that's why everyone was take care of the guy so nice, because if he dies, you're all dead, right? I mean, the biggest of them all, I think, was in Xi'an.
No, I'm not Chinese.
You're not? Okay, in Xi'an, then they have, what do you call it? The terracotta warriors and all that. That king went, and they made this huge thing. Huge, huge. Like that. So it's, yeah, like that. Take it. So they're on they're working on the theory you can take it with you. Okay.
They just didn't check it.
You're worth it.
Huh?
You're worth it.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, whether everybody else thought like that's another thing. Yeah, so the whole point is that you take you do your duties, take the medicine. Now, whether the medicine works or not, that's up to Krishna. Because we're saying, no, if I do this, I'll burn off the karma. But then you're saying, I'm creating the burning off the karma. What happened to Krishna burning off the karma?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because then how much karma is there? So if you have lifetimes of stuff, how are you going to burn off that karma here? Let's say you did something. Okay, like here we say, 100 million years. Like, can you burn that off in this lifetime? No. So therefore, then, you know, how is this going to work? Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you know, why? You just take the medicine. Whether it works, that's up to Krishna. And then if you see is that there's absolutely nothing you can do about it, then you don't worry about it. Like, you know, someone's in, you know, has this, you know, 4-stage terminal something, then you don't bother with the medicines. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, you know, why bother? Yes.
One devotee, scientifically, he approached this question about the karma and burden of the karma. So he came to the conclusion that we generate every day so much karma that by material means by karma we can possibly destroy it. Like till the end of the creation, it's not going to be destroyed because we're generating, you know, much more than we can actually burn.
Yeah, that's profit, right? I mean, it should be that whatever you do, you get more than what you put in.
It's profit, but it's negative profit.
What's the thing about it? It's profit. You know, what is it? You know, what is it? Ownership turns sand into gold, right? I mean, you look at Dubai. Sand, but they turned it into gold, right? Because they own it, right?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, well, that's what it says, the Pancha Mahayagya, because at every moment, then one's producing all this problems. The prescribed remedies for lust and other enemies of the mind are meditation on the Supreme Lord and Sankirtana, the loud chanting of his names. The remedy for the disease of false ego is rendering service to the Lord, Supreme Lord's saintly devotees.
Okay.
Right? So that's an interesting thing. So the remedy for false ego is serving the devotees. Right? For lust and all these others, that those six enemies, that's worshiping the Lord, remembering the Lord. Right? Yeah. By practicing, that's why you see the neophyte who tends to not necessarily serve has more ego. The Madhyama who does serve, then they have less ego. Yeah. By practicing yoga, some non-devotees keep their bodies youthful and fit, and may even achieve mystic perfections or long life. Like Prabhupada was in Kumbh Mela, he was saying he was going with the devotees. They saw he probably saw this one small group, like two, I think it was like three or four. They look like really young guys, like 16-year-old, but you see they have the big locks and the beards and all that. I pointed out, says they're like 300-400 years old. So they just come down for the mela, take their bath, and go back. Yeah, but it's not that they enjoy themselves in between, because you live longer because you have a certain number of breaths. So if you just stop breathing, you live for longer. But, you know, you can't do a lot when you're not breathing, so... You know, there's always a, what do you call it? A trade-off?
Yeah,
there's always a trade-off. But these attainments are actually worthless, right? That's the point. Because they are perfections only of the material body, right? Because only the body is going longer. What does that got to do with the soul? Soul's already eternal. An intelligent person is therefore uninterested in this kind of process. Rather, by taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, an aspiring devotee who is seriously dedicated to the Lord rids himself of all disturbances and becomes empowered to attain the highest perfection, the full bliss of spiritual life. Right? So bliss comes in rasa. Mm-hmm. So it means it comes to the platform of prema. All disturbances mean sense gratification. That's what causes disturbances. Shloka Nisharanam. Summary verses. Verses 1 to 9. Detachment from material duality. 10 to 23. The nature of ahankara. Verses 24 to 44. The perfection of yoga. Verses 1 to 9. Detachment from material duality. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one should neither praise nor criticize the conditioned nature and activities of other persons. Rather, one should see this world as simply the combination of material nature and the enjoying souls, all based on the one absolute truth. So, the living entities are doing all these activities simply because of their material, their conditioning, their material consciousness. Therefore, by the modes of nature, they happen to be at whatever point they're at now. So to criticize that, find fault in that, what's the point? It's just where they happen to be right now. So all one is doing is seeing that what Gita talks about, the modes of nature and the results of these, the divine and devadiac natures, all these different aspects, you just simply see it happening. So for you, you're just seeing the philosophy in practical application. So there's no need to criticize because you're just seeing, like it says, you know how you say, like that Gita Shloka, talks about that demoniac mentality, you know, so much wealth I have gained, I shall gain more, I'm surrounded. And then we're sitting there go, wow, what a nonsense. Look at this guy. Who is he? What's the point?
Yeah.
Does that mean
it's moving. So at the time where we're criticizing, it's already changed.
Yeah, that's in the past, and it's some new form of nonsense. Yeah.
And praising is the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Praising and criticizing are
putting... Yeah, because it's that he's doing a great job, he's such a great, such a philanthropic person, and this and that, and so nice, and so much nicer than the devotees, and, stuff like that. It's just, what's the point? It's just the modes of nature. Rather, one should see this world as simply the combination of material nature and the enjoying souls, all based on the one absolute truth. So that's what's happening, these two energies that Krishna expanded, based on him. He's the basis. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. There are two types of jnanis. One who sees oneness of the Lord. One group, accepting Vivartavad, says the world is false and Brahman is without change. This group rejects the theory of Parinamavad, in which Brahman is the material cause of the universe, since Brahman would then undergo change. Another group says Brahman is the material cause of the universe, since that Shakti, called Prakriti, change carries out the creation. Though Prakriti undergoes change, Brahman, beyond Prakriti, remains unchanged in nature. Thus, there is no harm in Brahman to this theory of Parinamavad. Right? So, you see these two kinds of jnanis. One who could see, one who can't see that the Lord as Brahman has energies. So, therefore, for there to be change means Brahman themselves would have to change. So, you'd have to have Brahma Parinamavad. And then that doesn't work out so well. So, but they don't understand he has energies because they take it that he has no qualities. So, he can't have energies. But the point is that the manifestation of these things are impersonal, meaning that they're generic. Right? So that's the position that's being given here. And so then the other group is able to see this and appreciate. So Shakti Parinamavad is not a problem. Right? So the one from Brahma, so they go into Vivartavad. Right? That's all illusion. The Lord has said, Prakriti is the material cause, and the Purusha is the foundational cause. Right? Here's another one. Material cause, foundational cause, or immediate remote. Or we also have the material, then you have the formal and the...
Operational.
Then you have the absolute. What is it? The
absolute.
Original.
Efficient.
Yeah. So you have all these different ones, depending upon which angle we're being looking at. So they're all different aspects of vichar, looking at it. So different terms are used because you're trying to bring out something different. So time, the indirect cause, is agitator of Prakriti. I am all three. Right, so he's time, he's Prakriti, and he's himself. Right, so he's everything. He's Brahman, he's the material energy, he is the time who agitates and then creates everything. Though there is duality in Parinamavad, there is oneness of Brahman. Since Prakriti is one with the effects of Prakriti, material world. Since Prakriti is one with the Supreme Lord, being his Shakti. And since there's oneness of the Lord, though he has many forms. Though both groups are jnanis, the latter group is approved of by the Lord. Among the first group, those who claim that the form of the Lord, his devotees, his abode, his names, and other related objects are all false, have been defeated in the story of Bharata, Srimad Bhagavatam 5:12-11. The Lord speaks this philosophy to Uddhava, who is curious about all philosophies, in 5 verses. After that, until the end of the chapter, the Lord's statements can be taken as either Vivartavad or Parinamavad. Right? Because you're having the illusory aspect, as we also see the illusion, but it's real, that illusion. Means it exists, but our perception is what is causing the illusion. Right? Does that make sense? So one is that this is how they'll look at it, and the other you can take it either way, because it's just a matter of which we want to bring out. Does that make sense? Because the process to get from where we are to liberation is the same for the impersonalist and the personalist. The point is because the goal is different, the impersonalist stops at liberation while the devotee keeps on going. That's just the platform that now it becomes dynamic. Right? Because now you can take part in the Lord's pastimes and all that. So it's the same. The difference is we know it's based on the Lord, while the Vivartavadis don't know that. They'll say it's all Brahman, but then they can't connect it to Brahman. So that technically they're not. They say that they're exclusive monists, but actually they're dualists, exclusive dualists. Because there's Brahman and there's illusion. While for us, we can see it's simultaneous one and difference. So it's not exclusive oneness, this is not exclusive Dwait. Right?
And they actually exclude each other, Brahman and illusion. Right?
Meaning?
If you have Brahman that is unchanging, how can you have illusion? I mean, it's all one, so how can there be illusion?
So that's why unless there's the Shaktis, you can't understand it. So that's the problem. Is for them, it will be very difficult. Krishna says, this path is for these impersonal. Yes. That's very difficult. Because to try to mentally work all this out and be satisfied is going to be very, very difficult. Because it can't be.
Is that why they use so many technical terms? To try to get around the fact that it actually doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything.
Even when they say that Brahman comes under the influence of illusion, so they're basically trying to say that illusion is greater than Brahman, therefore illusion is God and not Brahman.
That's the problem. These things come up, so then they have to change their philosophies to try to adjust with that, so that I know if there's four different kind of major groups of this impersonal. You know, and it's going with time. As the Acharyas give their arguments, then they come up with newer theories to try to avoid the actual conclusion. The word asad is taken by the followers of Vivartavad to mean false. But according to the followers of Parinamavad, asat means a real object, which does not remain permanently. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's the difference. So in that way, it's illusion to think I'm going to be happy eternally with this object.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Because otherwise, it's very hard to say. What is it? B? So you'd have to say BFUWD. So much easier to say just BFF, right?
Oh, right.
Right? Best friends forever, right? Because to say best friends until we die, that's going to be really hard. It doesn't have the same ring to it. or until one of us dies. Best friends until one of us dies. Yeah, it doesn't have that ring to it, right? Yeah. Yes. This difference should be noted. That's the actual point. That there's an illusion there. The illusion is that you think this temporary thing is permanent.
Yeah.
Or you think that this real object is not there.
Yeah.
Both of these are Vivarta. Right? Though effects in this world are real, they are temporary, and are thus called asat, according to the followers of Parinamavad. The followers of Vivartavad say that effects are completely unreal and are thus called asat. This fact should be understood, right? Exactly what's the difference between them. It's that simple. In order to explain briefly jnana, which has already been explained extensively, the Lord now begins to speak. One should not praise or criticize the natures of other people, such as peaceful or ferocious, or their actions, since one sees everything in the world as one with the Lord. Because all his potencies, the modes of nature, are making that one person peaceful and making another person ferocious. It's the Lord's potency, it's not them. It's because we're attributing to the soul, so that means it's the mode of passion, where we think there's differences of souls. This soul is peaceful, this soul is ferocious. It's actually, no, the souls are the same. The conditioning is different. That's controlled by the Lord's nature. Right? So the point is whether they're peaceful or ferocious, they should engage in Krishna service. Right? Because if they all take prashad, then everything works out. Right?
That's what Jesus Christ said. Hate the sin, not the sinner.
Hate the sin, not the sinner. But then the point is the sin is what? By this definition.
By this definition, the sin is like whether a person is ferocious, peaceful, or bad. And sinner is the
soul. No, but the point is where does the ferociousness and peacefulness come from?
From the body. The body is acting like that. And
the body itself produces it.
No, the soul's desire.
The soul's desire produces it.
Yeah, he desires, so the modes of material nature.
The modes of nature, okay. So if the modes of nature are producing it, then what has that got to do with the soul? So how is it specifically a sin? You understand what we're talking here? We're talking beyond the social construct here. Doesn't mean you don't follow etiquette and work within. But it means you don't see according to the social song construct. You see according to transcendence. You apply it within the construct simply because you happen to be there. Like that. So, it just makes you less self-centered if you look at, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. But the point is, you're not supposed to hate or like anything. You're supposed to be connected to Krishna. Right? Because what's the problem here? It's the lack of devotional service. So if it's a lack of devotional service, what's the hate? The point is the person should be engaged in proper service. So it's a matter of explaining to them how to perform devotional service. But if we look at it from the point of hating, then we won't have anything to do with the person. Because we hate the person, then we'll probably harass the person. We don't hate the person, we just hate the sin. We won't harass the person, but we'll still have nothing to do with them. You understand? So then devotion goes beyond that. You're showing them what's the proper way to be engaged in the Lord's service. It's different.
Then right? If you harass the sin through the person.
Sorry?
If you harass the sin through the person.
Harass the sin.
Through the person.
But how will you get at the sin? How do you know the sin is suffering enough by your harassment?
The person.
By looking at the person. Oh, I see. But then the problem is then you're only seeing the false ego of the person. You're not actually seeing the real soul. So are you satisfied just that their false ego is disturbed?
At least something.
But you do want to get to the soul?
Yes.
Or but the soul being transcendental, you can't get at them. Okay. We're working on it. Okay. Sri Krishna continued.
I have a question. When you are speaking about the sea according to transcendence, this is the main topic, so Vedanta Chakshu.
Vedanta?
Chakshu means to see.
Yeah, you could basically say like that. Because Vedanta, here in Vedanta, we're meaning the conclusion of the Vedas, and the conclusion is devotion to Krishna. So seeing everything, Krishna in everything and everything in Krishna is what you should be able to see.
Yes.
Then you're undisturbed in whatever situation you're in.
Yes.
That's there.
Yes.
The next one, prema charge, is then you're appreciating the relationship with the Lord and the devotees.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
On the darshan chakra, so you're starting to appreciate that there's all these different ways of seeing things.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Sorry?
After
payment chakras, you're already on payment. Where to go from there?
Mahabhav. Experience.
Mahabhav chakras. Yeah. Then you can do acharya degrees if you want.
Yeah,
for the degrees. Okay. But there are, we do have stuff beyond.
I know.
Like that. We have, I think it's 10 degrees.
10. Light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Just be careful it's not an oncoming train.
Sorry?
Just be careful it's not an oncoming train.
Oncoming train.
The light at the end of the tunnel.
Likely?
The light at the end of the
tunnel. Oh, the light at the end of the tunnel. Okay, yeah.
Tunnel.
Yeah, and then whether it's a car or whether it's two motorcycles.
Yes, that's...
So can you stand in the middle?
That's from some movie.
Okay. Something like that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.